into your nasal cavity.
So next time you make fun of somebody who has one of those little nose blocks on and they've got their geeky goggles on and they're trying to be safe, joke's on you.
They might
look ridiculous when they're nine and they're struggling and they're trying to hang out with their friends, but nobody wants to hang out with them. But hey, guess what? One day they'll be recording a podcast with a doctor.
As a result of the outbreak, your city or entire region may be endangered by a lethal agent. If conditions at your location make this a possibility, you need to consider staying in place until the threat has subsided or blown over.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Viral Load Podcast, the disease podcast for this disease world. As always, I'm Andy Pupa.
And I'm Brett Bales.
And we are coming to you fresh on a new setup.
So, yeah, we've got fancy new gear. There's lots of buttons and lights, and it looks fancy as all get out. And we're also recording socially distanced and responsibly in the city of Angels, Long Beach.
We're hidden in an underground bunker. And actually hanging out for a few minutes. We've cracked quite a few LaCroix.
And literally about six cans of LaCroix in front of us.
The room we're in might be littered with
and Purell bottles. So that's how we're surviving. 2020, the year where it's like I need 2020. Like I need a hole in my brain.
Yeah.
That's a little spoiler for what we're talking about today.
Ooh,
got it.
Yeah, getting into it. So thanks for holding on. I know it's been, if you're a regular listener, it's been a couple of weeks. We took a week off to get all this stuff sorted. So I hope, as Brett would say, it sounds good in your
earballs.
There we are. So we're feeling pretty good. This week's episode is a fun episode. We got a couple more we'll be laying down and enjoying today. But before we go much further, we did get a review.
Woo.
Yeah. So all of you out there listening right now, you just turned it on. You got your phone in your hand. Go over to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review and tell us what you think of the podcast, or send us an email and let us know what you're thinking. Just like Leslie Pfeiffer did, she states, "This podcast makes me forget that the world is falling apart and catching on fire."
Yeah.
"But really, great podcast and super informative. I learned the best with stories and little fun anecdotes embedded in info. I like listening to them on my runs, just the right amount for the time for me to feel like I will die, either by the amount of diseases out there or because of how out of shape I am."
Glad we could help.
Thanks,
that's awesome.
Leslie.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
This is how we get paid, everyone. This is how we get paid. We need these compliments to sustain us.
It makes us feel good.
Yeah. It limits the amount of time I cry myself to sleep at night. It really, it gets me through the day. So thank you. And today's a good one. So let this be a treat to all of you who have reviewed, and maybe those of you who are thinking about it, maybe this will push you over the edge. Cause we're back in parasite land. Parasites are they're just so great. They're interesting. But this is one that it's super rare, but it makes the news occasionally when it does happen because it's super freaking scary, and rightfully so. We are talking about brain-eating amoebas.
We're doomed.
You're good. Messing with the soundboard. So enjoy these new sound effects we're going to have coming through your earballs. I might delete that later, but just hope you enjoy it. We're going to have some more fun on the pod. So let's talk about these brain-eating amoeba.
Yeah, colloquially known as brain-eating amoeba, the Naegleria infection, spelled Naegleria, a rare and usually fatal brain infection. This is caused by an amoeba commonly found in freshwater lakes, rivers, and hot springs. These little buggers actually thrive in the surface water up temperatures above 86 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 30 degrees Celsius. We're going to have a lot of Celsius to Fahrenheit kind of conversions needing to go on today. So I got my Celsius to Fahrenheit converter fired up, so no worries. there. But these are little, you know, creepy crawlies that thrive in warm water, basically. They are a group of organisms that are classified as quote unquote free living amoeba, meaning that it doesn't require a host. So why this is important is that it can basically just kind of hang out in the water waiting for an unsuspecting human to, you know, make its appearance, make it, make him or hers appearance. And,
don't want to misgender those amoeba,
whatever. You know? Yeah. Either way.
Uncomfortable. Hey, those are the little, like, when you were a kid and you'd look through the microscope, they showed like the little single celled animals, right?
Yeah.
The little tiny.
I mean, these are, yeah, these are like, if you had to think of a little like microorganism, you would probably think of something like this because they have like little kind of
feet.
Like feet and arms and little, they're like little creepy crawly things.
Yeah.
But they're free living, meaning they're not like, you know, they don't have to live in like another host, like some of the other diseases we've talked about. So these little suckers get into people, when people go into their kind of their habitat, their, you know, like water, for example, swimming or other water sport type activities. The amoeba in the water supply there is a risk when it basically makes contact with your nose. And this is how the amoeba enters your body. It is not a big deal if you swallow it or if it just kind of washes over you and bathes in your and gets stuck in your hair and you swallow tons of it. It only becomes fatal when inhaled. So isn't that kind of interesting?
Hold on a second. What is that?
Snapple fact. Mm-hmm. Okay. Andy's got a toy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna have to literally chain myself away from this the soundboard.
But it's a good appropriate Snapple fact because that's what's kind of weird about this, right? Is you think of stuff making you sick when you like swallow it or whatever. This is only when you snort it up your nostrils. That's when it becomes a problem.
How did they figure that out? Like, how long did that take? Like, you know, like, cause they're swabbing everything. It's everywhere,
yeah.
But they're like, aha, when it like touches cilia with its cilia, does it actually like get in there?
Well, we kind of know what it does, like the little kind of route it takes towards the path of destruction that it leaves in its wake. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But it hasn't, you know, it's not been around that long. So,
new kid on the block.
Yeah. Nagliaria fowleri.
Fowler?
Oh God, I don't know.
Yeah,
named after an Australian pathologist named Malcolm Fowler. That's Australian guy. So he was he first isolated this back in the 1960s from a patient who was presenting with like meningitis type symptoms, so swelling, kind of brain stuff. Cause that's basically how it kills is it gets launched up your nose and then it makes its way to your brain where it, causes you to, die.
That uncomfortable part where, you're dead.
So, let's just take a step back and talk a little bit about what amoebas are. Cause we've talked about, like bacteriums and viruses and, you know, the like, but, amoeba, a different little creepy crawly that makes us sick. So, an amoeba type of organism where, okay, so let's zoom even further back. We can break down living creatures, living organisms as either one of two things, prokaryotes or eukaryotes.
Oh,
right?
Eukaryote out of here.
All right. Yeah. We're firing on all cylinders right now. Which are distinguished by basically the complexity of the cells. So eukaryotic cells typically are more highly organized relative to prokaryotic cells. Prokaryotes are bacteria, archaea, they're simpler, whereas other living organisms are eukaryotes. Amoeba are eukaryotes. These are little creatures that have bodies that consist of a single cell. They possess kind of a uniform set of features. Their cytoplasm, which is like, you know, their cellular contents and their goo, enclosed with a cell membrane. So that's the, you know, stuff that keeps it all together. They have DNA that is packaged into, and this is fun, a central cellular compartment called the nucleus. Mm-hmm. We know that.
We all know nucleus, even me.
Mm-hmm. And this is what's really fun. They contain specialized structures called organelles.
Aha.
Yeah, which execute a range of different things, functions like energy production and protein support.
I feel like all my, like the part of my brain from back in like third grade is on fire right now. It's like to grab all the things that I used to know from forever ago. And my brain's just like error, trying to put the puzzle pieces back. But somebody's like, another kid in class like ate the sides of the puzzle, so they won't go back together.
So your organelles are having trouble with energy production and protein transport.
Yeah, I'd say I'm more of a eukaryote and you're more of a prokaryote.
Oh, that's them fighting words. So single-celled creatures that move around like this are able to do so. And this is the fun part, where they basically have little false feet. So pseudopodia, they are little kind of arm-like structures. And so here's my super scientific way of explaining how this works. Basically, the inner goo of the cell streams into these little arm things and can make them either like longer or longer. And then essentially the rest of the blob of a cell catches up with the arm. So this is basically how it can make like glacial progress in a particular direction that it wants to go. So for example, like kind of trudging or sludging along on the bottom of a pond or lake. So I guess if you can kind of think of it as like, it shoots some of its goo into its arm, it makes its arm a little bit longer, and then it's just able to kind of like drag the rest of its carcass like forward.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like a flubber, like how flubber like moves in one direction and then grabs and then keeps going. Or like if you watch the movie, Evolution, where the giant thing is like just moving around and everything.
Yeah.
That's a giant amoeba.
Yeah. So I think, like we know amoebas from pop culture cause they're fun and they're, you know, weird and they're funny looking. But they're hard to treat with drugs. So this, you know, is a little more foreshadowing in today's topic and episode. Because they are more similar to human cells, with their, you know, kind of structure and their inner workings than like a bacteria are. So, because they're a little more complicated and they match like us a little bit better. So, the medication to like eradicate them, you know, it's not as great because, you know, we don't want to eradicate our own cells. So, you know, unlike bacteria, amoeba don't have any kind of hard walls around them. And so basically they burst from an inflow of water if they weren't for this. Okay, so we're going to talk about contractile vacuoles. Is that okay?
Ooh, yeah. That sounds oddly sensual. Hey, everybody, take a second out. If your children are listening right now, we're going to start talking about contractile vacuoles.
Well, it's just a little thing that steadily pumps water out of them. So some amoeba are social amoeba. I guess a little Freudian slip there. Yeah. These include, you know, your slime molds and the like, which aggregate together and they form these kind of like amoeba communities. Some are, you know, loners are the only cells that move, like our white blood cells do it also, for example. But you know, the idea is that there's lots of different types of amoebas. We're going to talk about one in particular today. But you know, we know of others that cause a whole bunch of different types of diseases. So amoebic dysentery, for example, is an infection called by, entamoeba. Histolytica?
Yeah, entamoeba histolytica.
Yeah.
Lytica? Would you say lytica? I don't know.
See, it is a human intestinal parasite. That's exactly all we need to know. It invades the colon wall. It causes colitis and can cause severe diarrhea and dysentery. So this is like an Oregon Trail amoeba.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It can occur anywhere, but most likely in tropical regions with substandard sanitation and crowded conditions. If you are wearing contact lenses right now, you should scream in fear for the infection of the cornea called Acanthamoeba keratitis. Yes, this is a species of free-living amoeba that are commonly found in soil, air, and water, but poor contact lens hygiene, like, you know, improper storage, handling disinfection. I don't know. I've never had to wear contacts. So,
yeah, yeah. Next time you touch your eyes, wash your hands. Mm-hmm. You should be washing your hands anyways.
Yeah. So if you were to contract this little bugger, you know, initial symptoms are pretty kind of common, redness, itchiness, et cetera. But eventually severe pain can give way to the loss of vision. So that's not great.
Yeah. As we say on the podcast, not good.
Yep. And then other amoebas can be fatal and spread through open wounds and breathing and contaminated dust, et cetera. So there's a whole bunch of different amoebas that we know about that cause a bunch of different types of disease in humans. We're going to be focusing on one in particular today. They're not all bad. I mean, these are like most things. They do play a role. They are actually important. So if you're thinking, well, let's just kind of nuke all the amoebas and get rid of them. They're actually really important for our soil ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, take that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we all like know how much that's important. There's good bacteria, bad bacteria. We all know, make probiotics and all that fun stuff. But, so it makes sense. Like, yeah. I feel like there's good and bad everything.
Yeah. We call that like an ecosystem service where, the amoeba in this case are performing a really important service for us by recycling nutrients in the soil.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. So basically without the amoeba, we wouldn't have good soil. So thank you, amoeba. Mm-hmm. But don't thank you, amoeba, when it comes to the human parasite called Naegleria fowleri. This is the one we're going to talk about. This is the one that causes the rare brain infection known as primary amoebic meningoencephalitis, and we're going to just call it PAM.
Ah, this is our receptionist, Pam.
This is what happens. This little creepy crawly is floating around in water, let's say in a lake. You go swimming in said body of water, and that water gets blasted up your nose into your nasal cavity.
So next time you make fun of somebody who has one of those little nose blocks on and they've got their geeky goggles on and they're trying to be safe, joke's on you.
Joke's on you.
They might look ridiculous when they're nine and they're struggling and they're trying to hang out with their friends, but nobody wants to hang out with them. But hey, guess what? One day they'll be recording a podcast with a doctor.
And they're not going to have an amoeba traveling up their nasal cavity to find a food source.
Exactly.
Ultimately arriving at the brain. And once it's feasting on brain tissue, your body's immune system sends white blood cells to fight this invader. This leaves the brain swollen, usually to a fatal degree.
Yeah. So not only you're a dummy for not keeping your nose plugs on, you're going to be even dumber because your brain's not going to work.
Yeah. We're bringing nose plugs back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. True story. I did have to wear earplugs when I was younger because I had ear tubes. Too. Yeah.
It's serious. I mean, hey, they brought roller skates back. We can bring nose plugs back.
Yeah. And fanny packs. You can keep your nose plugs in your fanny packs.
It's all coming back, people. It's all coming. Mm-hmm. I'll bring swimmies back if it gets cool, you know?
Yeah. And if it keeps them amoeba out of your brain, you know, fine. So that's what happens. These little things invade your nervous system when this contaminated water, again, is deeply inhaled via your nose. So not when you swallow it or whatever. It is through the inhalation.
Yeah, real quick.
Snapple fact.
I looked up why. I was like, oh, why does it travel to your brain? I guess they're actually attracted to what is released, like what is the hormone or whatever that is released when your neurons are firing. So there's like an actual thing that like it's almost like a scent that attracts them, that brings them to the neurons in the brain and they start feasting.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, I know things sometimes.
So this is why they migrate along the nerve fibers. They enter the olfactory bulb and they reach the brain kind of that way. And yeah, I didn't realize that. So maybe don't think too hard because maybe they sense that or something. I don't know.
Brett's in trouble.
No. So this PAM disease, this is the disease that it causes, is basically really severe brain inflammation and destruction of brain tissue. And these symptoms begin 2 to 15 days after exposure. So that's the incubation period for PAM. Mm-hmm. And like our old friend COVID, it can result in the loss of sense of smell or taste, fever, severe headache, stiff neck. But then it starts to get, I guess, a little more like a bad hangover, sensitivity to light, nausea, vomiting, confusion, loss of balance, seizures, and even hallucinations. So I guess, yeah, really bad hangover. Most people who get this infection are dead within a week.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about it because you're going to die.
And this is why it's so terrifying, because this thing has a death rate of around 97%.
Oh, just 97. Yeah. It's not that much.
Yeah, I mean, like not even as bad as rabies, just like 99 or 100. Anyway, super, super rare. Between 1962 and 2018, the year of our Lord, in the United States, only 4 people out of the 145 that have been known to be infected have survived.
Oh, dear God, no.
That's really scary.
Yeah, that's not good at all. I mean, that's horrible. So basically, if a doctor tells you you have this, if they catch this, all they're doing is telling you you have 3 days to live.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's terrifying because that's what it seems like. It's like if you get this, if it makes it to your nose, nose goes to the grave.
And as a man with quite the pronosperous,
this is a strong recommendation for those nose plugs. Mm-hmm. You know, they look silly, but God,
I'll look a lot sillier if I'm dead.
So the amoeba that causes this brain eating amoeba, as they say, that causes PAM, is commonly found in warm bodies of fresh water around the world. Usually this thing peaks during the summer months. Also, it's worth noting that sometimes this amoeba can be found in soil, but if you're getting soil blasted up your nose, then you've got other problems.
Yeah. You're probably doing other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, probably millions of people are actually exposed to this thing, and only a very, very, very tiny percentage actually ever gets sick from it. And we just don't know why that is. Gosh darn it. So from 2007 to 2017, here's some more fun statistics. There were only 40 infections reported in the US. And why some people end up getting infected while others don't is just not known. So this is a research gap that we need to know more about. But it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of, I guess, economic incentive since...
Because there's so many, like, there's not even that many cases. You can't even really find too many trends, like as far as like people who are infected. You're like, this bastard was really unlucky. Like, there's not really much you can go on.
That's a good point.
It's not like 10% of all women or, 90% of all older people. Like, there's not really much to go on when it's just 40 people in a decade.
Yeah. Really small sample size.
Really unlucky people.
Yeah. How do you get any trends or any kind of like, patterns or statistical anomalies or whatever? But actually we have been able to a little bit, and we'll talk about that in a sec. Don't you worry about that. So this is not spread from person to person. It's not spread from drinking contaminated water. And it can be prevented with maintaining and disinfecting things like swimming pools. So if you dump enough bleach into your swimming pool, I guess you're probably okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, then you... God, it just itches your eyes. So some other things that increase your risk. If you like to go down to the old swimming hole and do some freshwater swimming, that's where most people who do become ill. Freshwater lakes, that is the big risk factor.
Seems like stagnant water is the common denominator.
Yeah, especially during heat waves. These little suckers thrive in warm or hot water. And then age is another apparent risk factor. So children and young adults are more likely to be infected. I would say they're more likely to take a rope swing and like a face dive, into a lake than a 70-year-old librarian.
Yeah. Well, you think about kids, think about when you were a kid and your parents are trying to get you out of the water.
Yeah.
And you've been in there for 9 hours.
Yeah.
The longer you're in there, the more susceptible you are versus, I don't know, the last time I went to the the water with, like, even like right now when like your nieces and nephews, or if you have children out there who want to play in the water, you're like, yeah, I'm good for maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they can continue and I'll watch from the beach.
Yeah, exactly. So that's probably a biased sort of, whatever, surveillance bias thing. So, but regardless, those are, that's who's at risk. So, you know, few people ever survive this thing. Super, super deadly. Even with treatment, that's what makes this so terrifying. Also the whole, like, you know, brain eating kind of zombie thing. Hey, good episode for Halloween month, which is October is where we're at right now. Yeah. Yeah,
everything is the same.
Yeah.
Everything
is Who the knows? Same. I don't even know.
Oh, man.
But, the early diagnosis and treatment is what's going to give you any fighting chance at survival. If you are going to be treated, it's usually with an antifungal drug, which is interesting. And they usually will inject this straight into your veins or into the space around your spinal cord to try to kill the amoebas.
Awesome. This is Spinal Tap.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Great movie. They are looking at an investigational drug that can be used for emergency treatment. It is called miltefacin.
Yeah, seems all right.
Yeah. So they use this and combine it with other medications to basically try to manage the aggressive swelling of your brain, because that ends up, you know, being what kills you, is your brain just swells and gets damaged and you stop living.
You gotta, like, imagine that even getting funding for something like this, for a drug, like if they're trying to do an experimental drug for something like this, it's gotta be difficult, because you're like, this is really serious, and they're like, 40 people in 10 years.
Yeah.
And you're like,
yeah.
no, but it could be. And like,
yeah, I mean, that's why, like, there's a whole bunch of diseases called neglected tropical diseases, because, like, not that many people get it, or like, it's just not the kind of people that pharmaceutical companies want to target, because there's not, like, profit to be had. And yeah, with a disease like this, I mean, it's just, I mean, they're not going to be making oodles and noodles of money unless they charge like $1 million a pill.
Potential economic impact as well. Like, the costs of treating this disease is not going to surpass, you know, the cost of creating a drug. So,
yeah. So we may just kind of be stuck with it for the foreseeable future, but you know, knowledge is power. So there you go.
Yeah.
You know, you're listening to this. Now you know about it.
Who are researchers. You can jump on this, you know?
Yeah. Do something.
Yeah.
Come on.
Jeez. Where you been?
So
making a vaccine for COVID. Got it.
Oh, keep doing that then. Yeah. So after 35 years without a survivor in the United States, basically this thing was discovered, very rare. People were dying, at really high percentage rates. It took 35 years for us to see a survivor for the first time in the United States. And it was two children who were infected and survived. And this was in 2013. They became the 21st century's first survivors, put a little asterisk there, known survivors of this parasite. So this is interesting. They were treated with this experimental medication. It's actually a breast cancer drug. They were basically given a dose of this stuff, or doses. I don't know how it's done. I'm not a doctor. Well, I'm definitely a doctor, but I'm not that kind of doctor.
I'm not a doctor, man.
Yeah, not that kind. Unless it's for comic relief on a plane when someone yells, you know, doctor, is there a doctor in the house?
And you put your hand halfway up so that nobody takes it really seriously, but you still have the joke to yourself.
I'll raise my hand proudly, but then if they're like, oh, doctor, help, I'm like, oh, I can't. No, I can tell you your risk factors. And I can, like, interpret an odds ratio.
You do mouth
for
to mouth,
you.
I can tell you the odds ratio. You're catching whatever disease that person has.
I can tell you about your COVID risk, but no, I'm not going to be able to help you. So one of these survivors was a 12-year-old girl. The other was an 8-year-old boy who ended up, suffering really bad brain damage, but the 12-year-old girl, actually ended up being able to go back to school, ultimately.
Oh, wow.
So, the 12-year-old girl was diagnosed with PAM. Thanks, PAM. Approximately 30 hours after becoming ill, and was started on this, treatment within 36 hours. She, received this investigational breast cancer medication, and her brain swelling was basically super aggressively managed with these treatments. They also cooled her body below normal body temperature. So this is called therapeutic hypothermia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do that for a lot of stuff now. Like, that didn't used to happen back in the day, but they do a lot of for cardiac issues. And if they can't really figure out what's going on with you, they put you on ice.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what they did. And she was able to make a full neurologic recovery and, like I said, return to school. And that's basically why they thought she survived, was basically catching it early, throwing these combination of novel therapies at her and this kind of ice bath, apparently. And I'm imagining, like, therapeutic hypothermia, is it just like, it's just a big ice bath, right? Or they just like dunk you in a, like, a bathtub full of ice cubes, or?
Yeah, well, I imagine either that or they have those, so I don't know if anybody's ever like broken a bone, like seriously broken a bone, but they have those coolers that keep venting in cold air constantly, and it like super cools the like casts that are around your body. So I wonder if they like use those inflated casts that they kind of do. I've actually seen it in the hospital as far as regular inflation, like those little casts with the pressure and everything. I wonder if they do that, but with cold pressure.
Okay.
I don't know anybody out there. If you do this, let me know if I'm absolutely wrong. But guess what? It's fun right now.
Yeah, you said it, so it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Uh huh.
That's how things work. I don't know if you guys know. It's 2020. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So the other kid who technically survived, an 8-year-old male, considered a PAM survivor. Thanks, PAM.
Yeah.
Although
Pam sounds like we should be using Pam, like, instead Karen. Of Karen.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's definitely less Pams.
Yeah. It's all capital too. Mm. PAM. Very aggressive.
Mm. Seems like she has like an exclamation point all the time.
Bam. So this kid survived technically, but suffered permanent brain damage, was also treated with this experimental medication, and was treated actually several days after symptoms began. So not
as quickly.
Okay.
Not as quick.
Yeah. And the cooling the therapeutic hypothermia was also not used on him. So, okay. Two survivors though. Thank God for silver linings, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the summer of 2016, a 16-year-old boy was also one of the only survivors noted. So this kid became the fourth U.S. PAM survivor. I guess we're just going to skip right over number three because,
yeah.
You know.
I like how, yeah, that sucks yeah. If you're number three.
I couldn't find number three in my notes. So, you know, we're going to go to number four.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, the common thread here is that he was also diagnosed just hours after showing up to the hospital with symptoms, treated with the same protocol used for the 12-year-old that survived in 2013. And he also made a full neurologic recovery and returned to school. And isn't he so excited about that?
Yeah.
I guess you would be in those circumstances.
Yeah, I'd be pretty excited.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you had this thing that was eating your brain. Now you're back in school.
And now you're fine. But yeah. what a way to get out of homework, eh?
Yeah, those kids will do anything. Am I right? Am I right?
Yeah. Okay. Kids these days.
Those are crickets, everybody.
Those are crickets.
I hate myself.
Yeah. So, like COVID, the U.S. is leading the world in most cases of PAM.
We are number one. We are number one.
Yeah. So these are just, you know, obviously cases we can count. And as we'll get into, this is a disease that is likely going way underdiagnosed. But here's these patterns we were promising. In the U.S., of those who contract PAM, 79% are male. The median age was 12. And it's very much going underdiagnosed. I think a lot of people would agree. And part of that is probably just like nobody knows about this. I mean, if you went to like some random person on the street and just were like, oh man, that PAM disease is super scary, right? Like, you know, nobody knows about this.
They'd give you a sweet office quote right off that.
Oh yeah. PAM and Jim. So, you know, we're just not aware of it. Elsewhere in the world, like, you know, let's say off the top of my head, Karachi, the capital city of Pakistan.
Oh yeah. No, that's the first thing I think of. All.
Yeah. Actually, if they go out and they test the water, the presence of the amoeba seems to be a lot larger. Hmm. But you know, the impact of this thing on the population is just hard to quantify. It's like us in Pakistan. So, there we go.
Like, peanut butter and jelly.
Mm-hmm. The U.S. and Pakistan. And PAM. No crickets for that one? Okay.
Oh, my. I was trying not to invade with the sound.
No, it's, yeah. Well, I'm sure there'll be other opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So because this is a little free-living bugger that thrives in fresh water, You know, lakes, rivers, geothermal springs, spas, swimming pools, etc., or even discharge from electrical power plants, for God's sakes, you're basically exposed to this through recreational activities. Because it's not just, again, from you drinking it, you got to be like, you know,
having fun,
doing wicked awesome wicked dives, awesome
cool stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or whatever the name of diving things
Everything we used to do and we're not allowed to do anyway. Hey, there's an upside to 2020. We figured it out.
Ooh,
you're
we're going
to
see
have fun.
Oh, less fun means less Pam.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
We got you, Pam. All we're going to do is do nothing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Enjoy your stagnant water, Pam.
Yeah. So I know the expression you're giving me right now is like, you got to tell me about the three life forms that this thing exists in, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here we go. So when it's in fresh water, it exists in a environmentally stable cyst form.
Ooh.
A motile amoeboid form referred to as the trophozoite.
Oh.
And a flagellate form.
Okay.
Yeah. So, that is a bunch of random gibberish for probably most of us, but it will come up again in a second when we talk about other possible routes of exposure. So, you know, these brain-eating amoeba, as they're usually referred to in the media, the lamestream media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throwing out those catchy headlines.
Yeah, clickbait, brain-eating amoeba. I mean, who's not going to click on that? Everyone's going to click on that.
Meanwhile, it's actually just called Pam. If somebody was like, hey, these kids got infected with Pam, these would be like, just use butter. Am I right? Am I right?
These kids got infected with the motile amoeboid form referred to as the trophozoite.
Yeah.
Oh, not as catchy. So again, these things make their way to the nervous system through the nose when the contaminated water is inhaled deeply through the nostrils. So jumping into the water without a nose clip,
mm-hmm.
that's going to get you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all the destruction occurs. That's ultimately what ends up killing you. Like we said, widespread brain tissue destruction, and take an ice bath, I guess. So when you map this stuff in the United States, of all the infections, there's not many overall, but when you do put them to a map, it is Texas and Florida leading the charge, but you know, it's like the southern states. So because this is a thermophilic, warm water loving critter, mm-hmm. it's, you know, it makes sense as it's going to be lower down states. So, you know, that makes sense. Expert estimates, because we know we're underdiagnosing it, estimates put this thing between 3 to 8 Americans dying from this annually. So that's every year, I understand.
Mm-hmm. That's annual, mm-hmm. typically.
Yep.
I don't know anymore.
Victims, usually young, male, and this is the demographic most likely to go jump in a warm lake.
Last one there is a rotten egg.
I love that that's the actual sentence there.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you know, young men are typically, you know,
well,
50-50, but they'll jump. You give them a lake, they're going to jump in it, you know?
Honestly, like, the older I get, the, like, less I want to just go jump in a lake.
Yeah, you know? For sure. Like, I don't remember the last time I've looked at a pond or a lake and been like, I'll go to the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you're younger, yeah, totally. Like, I'd take a rope swing and go, you know, jump into a lake. But now I'm just like, oh, I'm going to get like, it's going to be cold. I'm going to get dirty. I'm going to have to
at
like,
the bottom of the sediment wet. Is probably, what if there's like those leaves that are like so gross and slimy?
Oh yeah. Like what is that?
Snapping turtles.
Yeah.
Like, your toes.
Yeah. I just don't want to deal with it. It's not worth it. I'm going to be all like uncomfortable. I'm going to probably like, there's leeches. Remember that scene from Stand By Me with the leeches?
Mm-hmm.
I got like all that's rushing through my head. When you're a little kid, none of that. You're not thinking of that.
You're more worried about sharks. So you're like, there's no sharks in the pond.
Yeah, exactly.
Little do they know, there's flesh-eating bacteria that'll eat your brain.
Yeah, yeah. So the CDC sought to find like a better estimate of, you know, how much of a problem this thing actually is, because we know that there are more cases that are being reported. So, and also because a lot of the symptoms are not, you know, are, I guess, general enough that a doctor is just not automatically going to say, well, you got a case of Pam. they're going to, you know, call it something else. So you don't actually really know until an autopsy is done and they can test the brain tissue. So the CDC in 2018 did a review of autopsy data of children that died of similar kind of circumstances. And they estimate that 16 U.S. children are killed annually. That's double the official tally of 8. So still very, very, very rare.
But still pretty, pretty rough way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and that's what's actually going on with the CDC right now is debating, you know, this is a super rare disease and they don't want to scare people. But it may not be as rare as we think. And, you know, because this is a naturally occurring kind of organism that occurs like all around the world, it may be more of a serious risk than we think or would like to think.
Well, all it would take was like one spreading event where somehow, you know, water from, again, that arachnophobia thing that I'm thinking of, like one little cup of that water with those amoebas goes to some other big lake and goes to one other big lake. And then all of a sudden you've got, you know, Lake Placid situation going on where you think there's just one crocodile, but turns out there's a dozen crocodiles and you're all going to die.
Oh God.
You know?
Yeah. Now think about that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, listen,
so I hope you're listening to this before bed. Yeah. Or if you're listening to this on your run, you know, and you're hurting and your legs are on fire and your lungs are on fire, just think it could be so much worse.
Yeah. Your brain could be literally turning to mush and you don't know until 6 days later and then you're dead.
Yeah. So, you're running and you got a little bit of a headache right now?
Oh.
Okay. So, yes. Because it's so rare, we also really don't know like that much about how to control it or prevent it other than, you know, dumping a bunch of bleach into the water, but not a super, you know, relevant prevention tool for every circumstance, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, you can't just like with a lake or, pond that has like fish and other wildlife in there, you can't just like be like, hey, throw a bunch of chlorine in there.
Yeah.
Doesn't exactly. really work out too hot.
Yeah. So, you know, some states are struggling to kind of adequately prevent this, like Louisiana, for example, where they have high summer heat, they have an aging water infrastructure system. You know, this basically makes the presence of this amoeba in the parish water systems basically a near annual event in the last decade or so. So this is something that like is a reality for them, you know. A lot of the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about the wet version of this, the wet infection, the wet. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to keep this. I'm going to keep this moving.
Listen, let's talk about the dry PAM.
Yeah. We've been talking about wet PAM. Let's talk about dry PAM. Dry PAM, you know, okay. So wet PAM is the common one. It's the one where we see most often. Okay. It's 93% of all cases have resulted from exposure to water. We'll call that wet PAM. Mm-hmm. But it has been argued that dry PAM, dry infection, also presents a serious risk. And this happens when people become infected through, and here's those cysts that I was talking about, where cyst-laden dust can enter your nasal passages, leading to infection that way. So it doesn't even need to be, you know, the fact that you took a sweet dive into a pond. Like, you could have just, like, have aggressively inhaled some dust, I guess, into your nose, and you can get the dry PAM all up in there and eaten away at your brain.
You don't want dry PAM up in there. It's no good.
Yeah. And these are especially worrying because what do you do to prevent that? Like, what do you do to avoid cyst inhalation other than just walk around your entire life with like nose plugs?
Well, it would seem like this would be a bigger problem somewhere in like Pakistan where it's a dry area.
Yeah.
And so like it comes out and it's in the sand that is outside of that because it's a desert climate. And so that, like, I mean, dust storms, wind storms, all of that, and they're dealing with inhalation of that.
Mm-hmm.
I would guess. I mean, I'm not a scientist, Brett, but I would think that that's probably more the case than some kid in Louisiana on the edge of a riverbed a pond just snorting up pond scum.
Yeah, but what if you're like on a ranch in Texas?
Oh,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I see you, Texas, all looking red and high risk compared to other states. And that's not politically red. That's a map of the PAM infections. Texas is just redder.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just how it is.
Hey.
So these little cysts, it's one of the three stages, mind you. Remember, we just had a long talk about this. Okay.
So I feel like you just snapped into perspective. Listen, this is gonna be on the exam. Yeah, I told you 10 times.
We just had a long, boring talk about this. There are three forms. We talked about this. The cysts, they can last for upwards of 5 whole minutes when they are all dried out and desiccated. But they have been found or shown to survive for potentially years when they're dried in like a fine clay kind of situation. And so basically, if it's a fine clay type soil, this can improve the cyst survival in the air, making it kind of a lingering, kind of reminds me of like an anthrax kind of situation.
Okay. See, you were thinking anthrax. Yeah. I was thinking people out there trying to think of a romantic thing to do.
Oh.
Maybe making clay pots like you're in the movie Ghost isn't such a good idea anymore, you know?
We just found out a way to ruin Ghost.
Yeah.
Who was in that? Well, hey, was it Patrick Swayze?
If you guys make clay pots, then maybe you'll be a ghost sooner than later.
Is that what killed him? Was a brain eating amoeba what killed him? I didn't see that movie.
I didn't see the autopsy report. So
we didn't say that it didn't happen.
Cases.
Yeah, we didn't know that. We don't know that it didn't happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
A few kind of case studies to kind of talk about that are of consequence, other than those couple survivors. Where we kind of got the idea for this episode recently, the governor of Texas declared a state of disaster for Brazoria County.
Brazoria, I think. Brazoria? If you're from Tejas, get back at us.
Yeah.
Let us know if it's, is it Brazoria, like Brazil, or Brazaria? Brazora? I don't know.
Some place in Texas.
Exactly.
A 6-year-old boy dies. And that fits the profile for this disease so far.
Yeah, Lake Jackson. So Brazoria County people.
Sorry.
Near Lake Jackson. So
sorry, Lake Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
The boy contracted the amoeba after playing in the local water park. So this put all the residents of Lake Jackson under a boil water advisory. So boil your water. I guess, it's too late if they're just listening to this and expecting health advice now.
Yeah. Everybody, our health advice is to always boil your water somehow. Mm-hmm.
But, chlorine does destroy the amoeba. So the city is looking to add like an appropriate amount of chlorine to its water supply, get them chlorine levels all situated and looking good.
It'll be like fluoride for everywhere. They'll just start adding it to the water source on a regular basis to try to minimize this, hopefully.
Yeah. But apparently they do chlorinate their water up to twice a year. And this is one of the reasons why, is because they're aware of this amoeba as a thing. The process of chlorinating the water takes a few weeks. So people need to boil their water while they're getting the chlorine levels all good to go, and just stay out of that Lake Jackson water park. Stay
Lake
out of
Jackson.
That. Stay out.
Amoebas for real. That was me, making a song.
Mm-hmm. Costa Rica has made the news. Costa Rica, Pura Vida. Not in this case, not Pure Life. Officials, found a 4-year-old girl, was hospitalized, and laboratory tests confirmed that she was infected with this amoeba. It turns out that she had visited a hot springs and began presenting with fever, headaches, vomiting. And she apparently started doing well with the treatment given. But, the idea is a lot of people, myself included, I've taken classes down there. I've done research down in Costa Rica. It's like, you see all these waterfalls. So don't go chasing those waterfalls in Costa Rica.
It doesn't work there because you have to say, so stick to the rivers and not the lakes that you're used to. Am I right?
Yeah. I think that's sound medical advice. Yeah. Who sung that?
TLC.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then Pakistan is where most of the modern case studies are also occurring. That is where most recently PAM infections are claiming the lives of young men across regions of Pakistan, other parts of the developing world or low-income countries. And it's thought that, while recreational activities are likely contributing to PAM cases like they are in the United States, what's interesting about the case studies from Pakistan is that those who got sick from this did not report a history of swimming, but were still succumbing to this deadly infection.
Oh.
Yeah.
Weird.
So what the hell's going on in Pakistan? And here's where things get a little kind of hooky, spooky different. Well, not really. It's just different from, like, you know, kids jumping into a water hole, basically. In Pakistan, the first known case was reported in 2008 in Karachi. This was a 25-year-old male who did have a history of swimming in a river, which was part of the water supply to the major city, Karachi. And we know also from environmental tests that this amoeba has been shown to be present in the piped water supply. So water coming into this city, we know theoretically has contained this amoeba. And when there was a large retrospective, that's like looking back in time, reviewing the cases, looking at all the people who had PAM-like, basically clinical illness, between 2014 and 2015, they found 19 cases, 63% or 12 occurred during the summer months. So this is like a summer thing. And daytime average temperatures were between 33 and 36 degrees Celsius. So that's 96.8 Fahrenheit for all you Americans.
Ooh.
Again, the predominant trend was also male, 84%. 10 out of 11 patients admitted to one hospital alone died within 3 to 4 days. One patient was successfully treated and survived. That's terrifying, just like it is in the United States. And, you know, what we're trying to think of now is, like, what happens when you're not, like, into little kid recreational activities like in the United States? Mm-hmm. And you found one that I've not ever seen before as a risk factor for a disease.
Yeah. Disease like this. This is a fun one. So again, I'm my part of my job on the pod is to go down the rabbit holes and find the weird stuff and find the real scary stories. And so this one's weird. As somebody who struggles with postnasal drip and issues with their giant schnoz, I've actually used one of these before, and this woman died because she used a neti pot.
Oh, don't ruin neti pots.
Yeah. So neti pots out there, anybody who uses a neti pot or has used a neti pot or your family uses a neti pot, listen up, because sometimes it doesn't work out so hot. So there was a woman in Seattle, and the headline read, "Woman in Seattle dies of zombie amoeba."
Oh, wait, what? Okay, so that is clickbait.
Yeah, so it was found after battling for a year with a brain infection. A portion of the brain the size of a golf ball was bloody mush.
Oh, God.
The culprit, the neti pot.
Oh.
So what had happened, so this is from the Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine, Bradenton School of Pharmacy, Kelly Scolararo.
That was my backup school.
Exactly. they're non-drug, they're natural. They actually effective at cleaning out mucus buildup and allergens from the nose and sinuses, and they're safe if you use them correctly.
Well, yeah, but, and they are not swimming with amoeba.
Exactly. So the three biggest things you can do is keeping it clean, using safe water source for the solution, and then, of course, using the proper technique so that they get a good rinse. So what happened with this lady? How'd she die? Yeah. What happened was that the woman died because she was using tap water filtered through her Brita.
Oh, but it didn't filter out the amoeba, apparently.
Uh-huh, yep. So they recommend that you use sterile water, not tap water, in your neti pot.
But that's like, you know, we know that water getting shoved up your nose, basically, because you're diving into a lake or whatever, is how you get this. And I'm looking at a picture of a neti pot, a person using a neti pot right now, and you're basically just jamming water up your nose, and it goes up one nostril and it comes out the other. And that's, you know, if you're trying to give yourself a brain eating amoeba, this is how you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're literally like throwing, you know, you're pushing it up there.
You're like, it is a device specifically designed to force water up your nose.
Exactly.
And so that's, God, what bad luck though.
Yeah, like, I know. Like, what are the, like, they're like, oh man, man, I've had this sinus infection forever. Well, now you can have a brain infection.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you just pulled landscaping,
dude. Yeah. So this is one of the other ways that it can spread. So so normally it's, you know, exposure to like just, you know, rivers or lakes or whatever. In Pakistan, it's happening more and more. It's happening when, you know, temperatures continue to increase and they're having trouble with potable water sources. But this neti pot situation is scary. I actually think I just saw something like this, a commercial for something like this recently. And it was just, it just kind of grosses me out. Cause like the water that comes out, it was like this big pump and it like gets collected and I don't know, just gross.
Yeah, it doesn't sound great.
No.
It's a nose colonoscopy or whatever.
Yeah. So in addition to neti pots, I also went down a little rabbit hole here and I found, you know, some other ways that we're discovering are putting people at risk for this. And that has to do with ablution practices. And now Merriam-Webster, the dictionary, defines ablution. I think I'm pronouncing that right. I don't care. The quote, washing of one's body or a part of it as in a religious rite, usually plural. Okay.
Okay.
So basically it's, you know, the ritual washing of your body or part of your body
Is this like when somebody is like older and they get baptized? Like when they're like, when they're like reborn?
That's a good question. You know? We should consult a religious scholar.
If you're a religious scholar out there listening to the podcast and you just like science straight science. And you also happen to be a religious scholar.
Hey,
send us an email.
The Vatican has an observatory. They do science. So that's exactly. Possible. So this happened in the United States, where a Muslim male patient was performing ablution and died, it seems, as a result of this.
Huh.
And when you dig a little deeper into some religious practices in Pakistan, for example, they've noticed a number of events that have contributed to PAM deaths. Yeah. So approximately it's estimated 20 per year. And when looking at these risk factors, it was confusing to them because a lot of them did not have history of swimming, or so they just didn't want to admit it. They're like, we don't swim.
They're like, I'm swimming in God's love, but not a pool.
Yeah. This particular hospital where they were seeing the spike in PAM cases, you know, it was a cosmopolitan city. All the victims were young men, and they all were strict practitioners of Islam. And, this disease is super rare, but it's super devastating, obviously, as we've kind of established. It's also super devastating for everyone in the family because it targets men, apparently. And in this area, they are the primary breadwinners. So what's thought to have happened is that as part of the Muslim faith and tradition, they pray five times a day. Before every prayer, they perform a ritual cleansing with the water, this ablution. And this involves washing the hands, the mouth, the nose, ears, face, arms, feet, head and shoulders, knees and toes.
Yeah.
And when they're cleaning the nose, many people will push water forcibly up into their nostrils, even though this is not necessarily a mandatory part of the process. And again, if there's going to be some of this amoeba in that water, this can basically cause an invasion of the brain.
Yeah, I feel like more and more there's more diseases that we talk about. I know this is like one of those like hashtags, the future is female, but I feel like the world wants it to happen too.
Yeah.
More and more guys are more prevalent to a lot of diseases. So,
yeah.
Hey, ladies, good luck to you. You're going to own this world one day, one way or another, you know?
Yes, queen. Yeah. Hey, they don't call it Pam for nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are other religious practices and festivals thought to be, playing a role in this. In India, there are these ritual celebrations where people will take baths in the sacred Ganges River. This poses a public health threat for a number of different infectious agents because it is a month-long festival where bathing takes place in this area where it's a confluence of several rivers. And up to 100 million people will participate in this holy bathing festival. And that's 100 million people. And just think of it.
Think about social distancing right now. And think about if there are 100 million people around you,
a confluence of this river.
You'd lose your
mind. Yeah, yeah. So as of now, there are no reported PAM-associated cases with this. But, you know, there you go. Sounds something like we should have on our radar. Yeah. Speaking
of problems.
Of a problem waiting to happen.
Problems that are currently happening but are not being noticed.
People don't really care about
because it's not real, according to a lot of people. More important than these problems is fracking, which seems to be...
is that what we're caring about now? Okay.
So we are talking about the one, the only...
climate change.
Mm-hmm. It's real.
Mm-hmm. And it may be making infections more common because the amoeba are thermophilic. They are extremophiles that like the warmth. And as the world heats, there will be more and more surface water at around 86 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 30 degrees Celsius for all you
cool others. Cats out there.
Yeah. So vis-a-vis, there will be more habitat for this amoeba. It just makes more sense, right? If it likes warmer water, and as the world warms, there's just more and more warm water for this thing to live in.
And this would be an argument for more research and need for a drug for this.
And these amoeba will thrive in temperatures of up to 115 degrees. So you don't have to worry about killing them off by making water too hot.
Yeah, Arizona, you're not safe.
Yeah. So what this means to me is that this thing's going to start marching further north, because where it was maybe once too cold, now it's going to be just right.
Goldilocks.
And there we go. The Goldilocks zone. So global warming is going to increase the number of hot and dry periods and going to cause higher freshwater temperatures. This has been associated with higher amoebal densities in water supplies. And also what happens when you're really hot and the world's burning, you want to go for a swim, boom, more recreational activities. So you have a warmer world, you have more people wanting to go in the water to stay cool. It seems like the writing's on the wall. We're going to start seeing more PAM cases.
Mm-hmm.
PAM.
Yeah, when it gets hot, you want to go in the water. And when the water is hot, more PAM.
And in places like Pakistan, where temperatures are reaching up to 50 degrees Celsius, that's 122 degrees Fahrenheit, for the love of God, what are you going to do? You're going to go swim, especially when you have prolonged power cuts. You have then millions of people turning to freshwater canals and ponds and other standing water to stay cool. In parts of Pakistan, they have power cuts that can go to 20 hours a day. And sometimes when you're a young
whippersnapper,
what are you going to do? The only thing you can do when it's hot as hell is you go swimming in some contaminated water, potentially. So that's what's kind of happening, the writing on the wall. We're not trying to scare you. We're just trying to terrify you. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we have conditions like that here, right? We have places like Arizona that's already hot. We already know is more of a risk factor for things like PAM, but also emerging areas of risk like New York, where, you know, a lot cooler than a place like Arizona, but that's changing and warming. So there is a concern amongst public health officials that as water continues to warm in more northern states, that more and more people may be at risk when they go into the water. This is a risk in places other than just lakes. So we ruined lakes. We've ruined neti pots.
What else are we going to ruin?
How about kiddie pools?
Oh, damn.
Yeah, because in 2002, this woman in Arizona filled up her kiddie pool with well water, and this contributed to the death of her daughter from this contaminated water. in Louisiana, they continue to test their water system and they continue to get positive tests for this amoeba. This has led to several deaths. This included one four-year-old boy who let water get up his nose while playing on a backyard slip and slide. And I used to do that a lot and for sure got water just jammed up my nose. So, sorry. The other, again, a man using home tap water in his neti pot.
I will say, when I was younger and I used a neti pot, I think I used regular water. You know,
God, so, and you're still here. Yeah, thank God. You know, I mean, dodged a bullet, man.
I know. I dodged several bullets.
You dodged an amoeba.
All these amoebas that are floating around.
Well, hey, I don't know. I've never used a neti pot, and
they're not fun. I did not enjoy it at all.
It looks miserable.
It was not comfortable.
I hate that feeling of water splashing up your nose, like when you go surfing or whatever.
They recommend like warm water too, so then it's just like uncut. Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah,
it's not good.
And we say, you know, we say the future effects of climate change. No, because they're already being felt. Because there were a few children who died from this PAM in 2010 and 2012 in Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Gonna go take the wife down to the cities this weekend.
And gonna take the wife and then we're gonna get PAM.
Yeah, we're gonna go to the Gophers game and maybe have some Applebee's after and hopefully not get PAM. But that is a risk now because this is 550 miles north of the previously reported northernmost case in the Americas. So this thing is marching northward.
Yeah, we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The CDC only knew of this as a southern state issue and now no longer. In the last 10 years, the CDC has identified cases in additional northern states like Indiana, Missouri, and of course, Minnesota, where previously there had not been cases. So most climate models agree that everywhere will become warmer. We will see an average global rise in temperatures, and we will see increased drought conditions in many places around the world. Other areas will actually see more rainfall. So a lot of people don't consider this, that you know, global warming, climate change is going to overall cause warming and drought, but it will cause some areas to become wetter with more like
water,
severe rain events and precipitation and such. So that means more potential habitat for these little buggers, right? You know, the kind of combination of drought and also increased precipitation in some areas may favor this amoeba and the spread of PAM. Because of basically things like the use of rooftop rainwater systems, which may become more attractive in some areas because you want to be able to collect and store water for drought.
Yeah, right? Like a catchment device. Okay.
Yeah. So if those things become contaminated with the amoeba, then, you know, good luck using your neti pot. And, you know, the use of artesian wells, drawing on infected groundwater is also expected to increase, which will then lead to more cases of PAM. You know, the microbiological safety of roof harvested rainwater is, you know, is a concern that, like, we know about. And this is often cited as a risk factor when investigating PAM-associated disease in Australia and South Africa. So just a few things to be afraid of. So be afraid of lakes, be afraid of
rivers,
neti pots.
Well water.
Yeah. Performing your
shadow,
ablutions.
Public restrooms, you know, clowns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, we got to do a clown disease one of these days. I don't know what it is, but
we'll figure it out.
The CDC says that Americans should assume that amoebas are present in warm, fresh water. There are no standard tests to detect whether it's in the water. So the CDC recommends that if you're going to go for a recreational swim, you should assume that this stuff is in there, and you should be a super cool guy or girl and use a nose plug while swimming.
Yep, that's actually from the CDC. We were making that up.
They also suggest avoiding dunking your head in water swimming in lakes. So super apt and relevant advice there, CDC. Mm-hmm. But that's what they recommend. So if you're going to go swimming, just, you know, nose plugs and just don't dunk your head in water.
Yeah, exactly. I mean...
So saith the CDC.
Yeah, so...
So that's it. That's the brain-eating amoeba. My brain is damaged, maybe more from just all the things I had to try to pronounce, but that's it.
That's it. So we hope you enjoyed Pam. We enjoyed Pam, not as much as the people who had Pam.
And this episode brought to you by Neti Pot. Oh, shit.
Neti Pot, if you want to jump on this, I mean, hey, at least, all press is good press. Am I right?
Yeah.
Neti Pot, who else is talking about you? Let's be honest, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So this has been a lot of fun. As always, if you have any ideas for an episode, I know there's a few that we got way back in the day. We are actually doing our first call-in interview next weekend with a specialist. So we will be getting those people on. So we did not forget about you, Chris, and I think it was Tammy at the beginning. I forget. But I'll look it up. But we have your episodes all in a file. We're going to go over them all. But shoot us an email over.
Send us ideas. Yeah, we got a whole ideas spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. It's something to see.
Brett has a spreadsheet. I used to have a Rolodex by letter. What's it called? I guess I don't use it if I can't even think of what the Dewey Decimal System is.
There we go.
Yeah, that's how I do it.
I color code mine by whether neti pots are involved.
Exactly. Yeah. And as always, follow us over on all the social medias. We are Viral Load Podcast on everything. And please go over and rate, review, help us out, make us feel good about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And
your nose plugs.
Wear your nose plugs and hope you enjoy. Let's see if this works.
Ooh, that was good.